Well, what's going on, everyone? My name is Brandon James, and this is the podcast that has to do with everything automotive, occasionally some business, occasionally some life. And as most of you know, I'm still currently active duty Army in the Special Operations community as a Special Operations Combat Medic. So occasionally we'll kind of toss in some of those stories, but I'm going to save a lot of those for whenever I get out of the military, which is next year, because some of them I probably shouldn't talk about while I'm still in right now. However, the topic of this podcast is going to be on the automotive industry and specifically the state of the automotive industry. I mean, right now we all know it's basically in a shambles at this point. And just look at the global market right now. China is kind of setting themselves up to take over the global auto market as we can see right now. Europe was kind of accepting initially of Chinese vehicles. And they're backpedaling that super hard right now. The president of the European Union, the female Ursula von Dinkelwitz, whatever her name is, she's basically said, hey, look, the practices of the Chinese car makers right now, which there's over 100 Chinese different, makers of Chinese vehicles. It's not fair. The Chinese have basically subsidized all of their vehicles. They are basically, you know, they can take a company that is getting ready to go bankrupt and they can make it more profitable on paper and more valuable than something like General Motors. Now, this is not a defense of General Motors because General Motors is basically a government agency at this point. I think that's why most people call General Motors government motors, because they kind of are. They take so much taxpayer money, it's not even funny at this point. They have tons of government contracts. So basically, yeah, they're kind of a government industry at this point. They're a government company. And, you know, there's a little man in Italy that tried it back in the 40s where he was trying to merge government and the private market. And, well, you know, that didn't really work out too well. So that's something that we need to be aware of. But again, the Chinese are breaking into Europe. They've broken into Latin America at this point. And I think Latin America was actually one of their primary staging points to then break into the United States car market. There's a tactic that they use. I can't remember the specific term, but it's basically like locating your troops along a border and then preparing for the invasion. That's essentially what they're doing. They're building all the infrastructure down in South America right now. They're preparing to bring the vehicles that they're making overseas in China. They're preparing to then move those factories or build new factories within Latin America at this point, because right now we have this thing called NAFTA, and NAFTA allows vehicles that are made in Mexico to then come into the United States and not be hit with a tariff at all. I'm not sure how that is, how that's legal, but apparently, according to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, I think is what it stands for, they allow that. And, you know, I don't remember Mexicans being North Americans, maybe like geographically on a map, sure, but they're not Americans. So it's kind of a hokey system. And hopefully that changes here pretty soon, because it's not really fair to the United States auto industry. However, I am not defending the U.S. auto industry. I think the U.S. auto industry is a very corrupt organization. It is a very evil organization, if I'm just being honest with you. I'm not saying that the people like working the factory line or, you know, the people working at dealers, even though they probably should be included in this. It's not an ethical organization is what I'm trying to say. You know, you can't tell me that, like Toyota, for example. Toyota has been making the Toyota Tacoma in the United States and Mexico since 2004. Their Mexican plant opened, I believe, in April of 2004, if I remember correctly. Regardless, it still opened in 2004. Toyota has exclusively moved all Toyotas to be made in Mexico at this point, and yet they don't give any sort of price reduction on the vehicle. I'm not sure how that's even like ethical business practices, but you've literally taken something where the price range for the labor costs for a vehicle made in Mexico is like $275 an hour for the laborer. In the United States, it's like $25, $30 an hour. And they've made zero reduction in price. They've actually made the vehicle cheaper, you know, with components, engine components, the interior parts are cheaper. Everything about the new Toyota Tacoma is cheaper, yet they're still commanding a higher price for it. That doesn't make any sense. That makes zero sense. The only thing that they're trying to do right now is just squeeze more money out of their customers. And I believe this is, I believe a lot of the auto industry, the automakers right now are doing this. Ford, for example, is probably one of the worst. And Ford, honestly, I was watching an interview with Jim Farley yesterday. It was like an hour-long Aspen Institute or something like that. That man is scared right now of the Chinese coming into the United States. And honestly, we should all be a little terrified of the Chinese cars coming into the United States. It's not just a simple, well, hey, you know what? This vehicle is $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 cheaper than the American counterpart or the Japanese or Korean counterpart. It's not that simple. The Chinese automakers, you're not competing against, a private company. You're competing against the state, the government of China that has an endless supply of money that all they have to do is just turn the money printer on. That's not fair trade. That's not a fair business practice. Now, I get it that a lot of the American, Korean, and Japanese automakers and German they do receive subsidies from the government. However, they don't receive even remotely the same cost. Nothing is even close to what the Chinese automakers receive year over year over year from the Chinese government. It is an unfair trade practice. It's just that simple. Now, if the Chinese were fair with their vehicle production, they were fair with their auto manufacturing and they weren't taking the amount of subsidies they're taking, I would be all about the Chinese vehicles having a slow introduction into the United States, maybe a very limited introduction in the United States, because there's a lot of spyware, there's a lot of tech, there's a lot of data collection that's going to go on with those vehicles, and we have to be aware of that. But people don't seem to care about those things. You know, in China, for example, if let's say you're a Chinese citizen and you bring a Tesla over to China, or the Tesla is made in China, you can't park that Tesla next to a government building. The Chinese government will not allow that. So they know something is going on. They are very aware of what is going on with these electric vehicles, for example, like Tesla. They know what's going on. These things are data collection hubs. I mean, even Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, said that these vehicles, people are very, I have to pull up the quote here because it's just that crazy. He said something along the lines of, let's see, I got it in here somewhere. This is a crazy quote here. He said something along the line, I can't find it. He said something along the lines of, people don't realize how technologically risky these products are. And he said something along the lines of, these vehicles are data collection machines. They're mobile drones. He said mobile drones. Think about that. If you view China as a competitor, for example, then this may not bother you. But if you view them as an adversary, which they are, then that should scare the ever-loving shit out of you. Because now you've essentially brought in all these drones. You're just flooding your industry and your country with drones that are being controlled by China. It's kind of a scary thought. And for me, as a special operations guy, like that concerns me. You know, the KGB said in the 60s, that one of their main goals was to put cameras and microphones in every household of the United States and of the world if they could squeeze it. And that's essentially happened. I mean, look at your phone, for example. It's got two cameras, sometimes like five cameras, and multiple microphones built into it. Monitors, TVs, computers, they all have cameras and microphones in them. Some of them just have microphones, and there's no microphone function. There's just a microphone in there for some reason. And we want to bring all that. We just want to flood the industry. We want to flood the market even more with vehicles that are going to spy on you. They're going to take your data. They're going to sell your data. I think Zuckerberg even said something like, your data is more important than your life or something like that. That's a scary thought. And I think we need to be a little bit more aware of that. I'm not saying you need to just delete all your social media and, you know, be a hermit. That's crazy. I get it. You know, personally, I'm new to social media. I haven't had social media in like 20 plus years because I don't like it. I think there's a lot of issues with it. However, it's just the way of the road, as they say in Trailer Park Boys. It's just the way of the road at this point, especially for business. and there's really no escaping it. But the automotive industry right now, and enthusiasts, you have one sector of enthusiasts that are all about Chinese vehicles coming in, then you have another sector of enthusiasts that see the writing on the wall. They see the reality of the situation by bringing Chinese cars in. But also, we have to understand, why did it get to this point? We have people right now in the United States that can barely even pay their grocery bill, that can barely pay their basic utilities. And look at the cost of vehicles right now. It's crazy. You have the Dodge Hornet, for example, which nobody knows exists, retailing for like $40,000. And right now they're cutting prices back on those Hornets because they're just not selling. Number one, Chrysler and, well, I should say Dodge, is not, they're not marketing the vehicle. The Dodge Hornet, you can get some of them for about $23,000 to $27,000 right now, brand new, which is not a bad deal. And honestly, I'd love to get behind the wheel of one just to see what it drives like. And if it drives awesome, I'd consider buying one. You know, it's still a brand new car that's going to have a warranty if the company continues to exist. That's the other thing. Dodge, Stellantis, I should say, is not doing too well right now in the industry. So there has to be some, you know, forward thinking on that. Like, okay, yeah, sure, it has a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. Is the brand going to exist? I would say yes. I would definitely say yes. Dodge is going to exist for another 3 years. I think the one thing that's keeping, Stellantis North America alive right now is the Ram series of trucks, their vans, their actual trucks, and easily the Jeep Wrangler division is what is keeping Stellantis alive right now. And their other vehicles, I hate to say it because I love Jeep as a brand. I love what it stands for. I hate the company, but I love the brand. I'm sorry, but the other vehicles that Jeep makes are just kind of trashy. They're, you know, the Liberty, the Patriot, the Grand Cherokee. The Cherokee especially is a freaking joke. And then you have the $125 billion Jeep Wagoneer, which is a massive insult. You know, the original Wagoneer was supposed to be like a family hauler off-road vehicle, and now it's like some luxury pimped out mobile that's trying to compete with the Cadillac Escalade. This is the problem with Jeep. Jeep is straying so far from what they used to be that they're pissing off their legacy customers, and these legacy customers are moving to other brands. I can say that because I used to be a Jeep legacy customer. I don't ever see myself purchasing a Jeep product ever again. I own 3 Jeeps. I rebuilt 2 of them. One was a 92 Cherokee. It was a totaled vehicle. I rebuilt it. And then the other one is a 98 Wrangler TJ. Rebuilt that one as well. And then I have a 2018 JL, first generation. Bought it brand new. First new car I ever bought. And probably the last new car I ever buy. That was stupid. But I'm done. I'm done with Jeep. They've lost touch with reality. The Stellantis division seems to think that they can just go ahead and abuse the American market for some reason and just put out crappy products after crappy products and expect people to continue to buy. And, you know, the Wrangler seems to be getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper in quality, but the price seems to keep going up and up and up and up. And that's just not Wrangler. That's all of the industry right now. There's very few affordable vehicles right now that are on the market. You know, you have the VW Jetta base model. I purchased a 2024 VW Jetta base model for my business for hauling energy drinks. Gets, you know, 42-ish to the gallon, 6-speed manual. And it was out the door like $22,000, $24,000 with a 10-year warranty. So, and I purchased the extended warranty on it. So you can get good deals, but those deals are disappearing so fast right now. And there's not a lot of brands out there that are able to accommodate this. And, you know, a lot of these brands right now, especially like Ford and, GM and all that, what they're doing, and Toyota especially, they're just continually raising these prices and lowering the quality. But it's all the brands really doing that. Those ones just kind of come to mind right now because they've made a lot of big moves recently, like with Toyota moving all the manufacturing for the Tacoma to Mexico. You know, that's a big deal. You not only Americans lost their jobs, but then the quality of the product is going down. And some people say, well, it doesn't really matter what country the vehicle is made in. I completely disagree with that sentiment. Would you rather have a Japanese-built Toyota Tacoma or a Mexican-built Toyota Tacoma. Everyone that knows vehicles or knows anything about Japanese culture would say, I would rather have a Japanese-built vehicle. I'd rather have a Japanese-built BMW. I mean, it's very obvious, but same thing with BMW. My 2022 M340i was built in Mexico. I would rather have a German-built BMW M340i, okay? Like, you want vehicles made by someone who gives a shit about the vehicle and the production of it. And I'm sorry, this isn't an insult to Mexicans, but the Mexican build quality for vehicles is just not the same as an American build quality. And it's not an American build quality, an American build quality is not the same as Japanese build quality. Japanese build quality, in my opinion, is top of the line. It's better than American build quality. And a lot of that has to do with American culture. There's an issue in American culture right now where, unfortunately, people feel very entitled for certain things. They think that just because you show up to work and you do your job, that somehow you deserve like a pay raise or something like that. That's putting the time in doesn't qualify you for something special. That's what you're supposed to do. To get something like a pay raise or a bonus or extra vacation days, you need to go above and beyond what your job is asking you to do. That's just the reality of the situation. You need to take pride in your work. It's not just clock in and clock out. Those are your standard employees. I call those people grunt work. You're just doing basic grunt work. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you got to drop the entitlement. And, you know, pride in people's work is gone. I mean, you know, obviously there's a say, if you've ever been in the military or worked for the government, I should say, there's a saying and it's good enough for government work. I hate that saying so much because that just means you are willing to compromise your work ethic, your morals, your duty because it's good enough for government work. It's like when somebody mops a floor, for example. I still clean the bathrooms at where I work for the military. I still clean the bathrooms. I don't have a problem doing that. You know, I'm a staff sergeant. I go in there and I clean the bathrooms with support personnel that support third group. I go in there and I help them clean the bathrooms because I'm no better. Okay. I have no issues doing that, but you'll have people that will, you know, they won't do that. It's beneath them, they think. And I can't subscribe to that style. That's just not me. So, you know, for example, we were cleaning a bathroom one time and this dude didn't really do a good job cleaning. He said, it's good enough for government work. And I said, no, dude, get your ass back in there. All right, we're going to clean this right. And that seems to be a common theme in America right now is this good enough for government work. And I just, no, it's not a quality mindset to have. And people that actually are driven and motivated individuals, people that are the movers and shakers in society, they're going to notice that level of work ethic that you have, whether it's good or bad. And they're going to know what to do with it whenever it comes time when they need to hire someone or they need to fire someone or they need to promote someone or they need to reduce someone's hours. They notice those things. And, you know, in the automotive industry, I hate to say it, but a lot of things like the UAW, for example, I don't think are doing the American economy any good. And I don't think they're doing the workers any good as well. The UAW, I think, is a very corrupt organization. One day I'm going to do a documentary on the UAW if they even exist in the next few years, because honestly, I don't know if they will. The UAW is not helping the American auto industry at all either. They think because they show up to work that somehow they're entitled to all these benefits. In general, unions are not a good thing in the modern era. I think back then, you know, when, you know, the Industrial Revolution and all that was happening, sure, you know, I get it, man. I get why unions kind of became a thing. But in the modern era that we're in right now, I don't think unions are a good thing. If a company is treating their employees poorly, people are going to know about it. That's the power of the internet. You know, as long as the internet's not censored and people are able to actually voice their opinions, the internet is an amazing equalizer, because if somebody is being abused at work, working conditions are poor, you bet your balls someone's going to whip out their phone and they're going to record it. That's just the reality of the situation. Yet you have some of these people in unions demanding $150 an hour. And that's not even a joke, by the way. That's not a joke. We have people in unions right now demanding $150 an hour and 4-day work weeks, which, by the way, I'm actually not against 4-day work weeks. There's some stuff out there that has shown that depending on the job you're in, a 4-day work week is actually better, where everyone has a 3-day weekend. And honestly, depending on the job, if you can do it and you can swing it, I think that should be allowed. But there's just too much entitlement. Where in Japan, they take pride in their work, man. You know, companies like Toyota, for example, have really instilled a quality work ethic in their employees. Now, sure, Toyota quality is definitely going down 100%, especially after the Mexican beer virus and everything like that. Toyota and really all, I've had people in all companies of the automotive industry hit me up and tell me this, and they all say the same thing. Because of COVID, because of the pandemic, now companies like Toyota, GM, Ford, Stellantis, all that, they're all accepting poor quality parts because it was a norm during COVID to accept poor quality parts because the supply chain is broken. And so they were just taking what they could get and putting it in vehicles. And Toyota used to have a very strict policy on defective parts or poor quality parts. If there was, you know, small mistakes with the part, they got rid of it. They returned it or they threw it away and they put a quality part in there. That's not the case anymore. That's not the case anymore at all. I had a guy that worked automotive supply chain hit me up recently, and he does QC, quality control inspection for brakes and rotors. And he told me he was failing stuff nonstop. Oh, this rotor had this defect. Oh, this brake had this defect. And the bosses that dude works for, they told him, hey, you have to start passing these things. That is so wrong on so many levels, especially not just from a business standpoint is that wrong, and a ethical standpoint is that wrong. A safety standpoint is terrible from that, because the brakes, oh, I don't know, they kind of stop your vehicle. What if your brakes fail? You know, who's going to be responsible for that? Is it going to be the guy that was QCing the parts and said, yeah, it's good to go? Or is it going to be the company? Is it going to be the manager who told them to stop doing that? Where does it stop? And so we have to really ask ourselves these questions right now, is where is the automotive industry going to go to here in the future? I honestly, I get a little optimistic sometimes, but right now, the past few months, I'm not very optimistic about the automotive industry. The war on fossil fuels right now is just destroying engineering and innovation right now. If electric vehicles are really that fantastic and they need to be the standard for vehicles, then let the market decide that. Let the market drive that, and let people that are innovative take the reins on that and let them do it. Injecting free money to these companies like General Motors and Ford, for example, Ford taking $9 billion from the federal government to build three factories, but then cancel two of them and only build one. Oh, and by the way, that one factory is able to switch over to internal combustion vehicles. Very political of you, Ford, and hats off to you for getting a free loan, I should say, or at least a very unfair loan that you would never get from a bank. But let the market decide these things. If you're an EV nut, nothing against you. But just so you know, not everyone thinks like you. And not everyone thinks like people that own internal combustions. We all think differently. And I don't see the reason why we need to have this whole idea of, well, it needs to either be electric vehicle or fossil fuel. Why can't we have both? You know what? Why can't we have nuclear powered cars? Why can't we have hydrogen? That's, you know, obviously the nuclear is a joke, but why can't we have hydrogen powered vehicles? Why can't we create different methods of combustion or different methods of transportation? Why does it have to be one or the other? You know, that's what innovation does. When you allow people, you deregulate, you allow people to experiment and kind of become creative with their thought process and allow them to just work. You know, magical things freaking happen. And I'm a big believer in being creative and, you know, making mistakes and learning from those mistakes. So anyways, that's the podcast. I know we kind of went all over the place there, but, you know, I wanted to get something out for you guys, and I've been thinking about this subject quite a bit. I'm always thinking about the automotive industry and the economy. And, you know, obviously I work in the energy drink space and the creative space on YouTube. And, you know, I make documentaries for other companies as well. So I always have just like tons of thoughts flying through my mind. And sometimes I got to write them down. And sometimes I just got to put them in a podcast and let you guys decipher what you want out of it. But other than that, I really appreciate you guys listening to these podcasts. It's actually growing. Holy crap. The podcast is actually growing. And I'm not really shooting it out there and sharing it. And I can tell that you guys are actually sharing the podcast. So I really appreciate that. And if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can hit me up on Instagram, TikTok. You can hit me up on my website, abombenergy.com. You can hit me up on YouTube, Facebook, all that stuff. I'd be happy to have a conversation with you. If you have any questions, you know, feel free. Thanks again, guys. Have a great one. Bye.